So part of the reason why I didn't want Billy to go into too much detail about the University of Chicago Crime Lab is what I'm going to say today is really my view, my opinion, and just based on the years of work I've done in the field. I do work with a bunch of people who do really rigorous research, and I'm very proud of what they do, but I would not say that they all are necessarily going to fully endorse everything that I say, because I tend to be more on the advocacy side. So, and I spent 10 years actually working at the Joyce Foundation, which is how I got to know a lot of the folks here working to fund the Joyce Foundation funds research and policy advocacy in the area of gun violence prevention. All right, so let's see if I can figure this out. Okay, the answer's no. Okay. So I'm guessing the public health crowd is pretty sophisticated when it comes to the issue of gun violence, so this slide won't be a huge surprise, but essentially it shows the homicide rate across cities and then the percentage of the homicide rate in those cities that's driven by gun homicides. So the yellow part of the bar is the non-gun homicide rate, and as you can see, most, you know, the cities in the U.S., New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Detroit, are not that out of line with cities like London. Where we are just such an outlier is in the percentage of our homicides that are driven by guns. And I come from Chicago. Our homicide rate is 2 to 3 times as high as Los Angeles, I'm sorry, of New York City's, and a third higher than Los Angeles's, and that's entirely because of the guns. So in Chicago, or actually in Illinois, we have relatively restrictive gun laws. And I use the word relatively intentionally because that's by U.S. standards. By international standards, we are awash in guns and have pretty easy access to guns. But Illinois is the only state left in the nation that does not allow any form of concealed carry. Thank you very much. We'd like to keep it that way. Chicago itself has even more restrictive gun laws. Nevertheless, the Chicago Police Department take off the street anywhere from 8,000 to 13,000 guns a year, depending on whether or not you count the gun buyback guns, but just a huge, huge number of guns every year, even though in the city of Chicago there are no gun stores, there are very few legally owned guns. And that's actually, we have our new police superintendent is from New York City by way of Newark. And he called one of his colleagues just to sort of see year-to-date how New York City is doing compared to Chicago. And we're taking off 7 guns for every gun that New York City takes off the street. So we are just really suffering from the fact that despite our restrictive laws, we are surrounded by places that have very lax gun laws. So in the city of Chicago in 2008, so that was the year that we have the most detailed data, there were 513 people who were killed, and 80% of them were killed with guns. And the vast majority of the people killed with guns are killed with handguns. And we often talk about the gun violence problem and talk about the homicide or the lethal violence. It's important to remember that for every every homicide, there are 4 to 5 non-lethal but serious gunshot injuries. So in Chicago, and this is a problem that I think the new superintendent's trying to fix, they don't have good data on just how many people were shot. He does a CompStat program, which is a sort of a management tool to try to get a sense of what's going on sort of district by district. And he keeps saying, just tell me how many people got holes in them this week. So we don't yet have the precise way to pull that out of the police data, but it's sort of a less precise but still I think telling, is that we've had 2,415 people who were assaulted with a firearm. So that can be shootings, that can be other kinds of crimes involving guns in Chicago at the same time that we had the 513 homicides. So another way to look at the data, and part of the reason why I think I was asked to talk, is Chicago has, for better or for worse, become ground zero for the youth violence problem nationally. And we've had, over the period of September 2008 to April 2010, there were 600 Chicago public school kids who were shot. 64 of them were shot fatally. And that's, I think, another important piece of that is, those are just kids who are actually enrolled in school. If you look at people 21 and under, so in Illinois you can be up to age 21 and still be legally entitled to school, there were 157 school-aged kids who were 21 and under who weren't enrolled in school, who were killed, and 64 who were enrolled in school and were killed. So being disengaged in school is a particular risk factor. I think fortunately Chicago really has had the benefit of some really good leaders, people who really have fought hard to try to address the gun violence problem. Arne Duncan, you may all know now, is the U.S. Secretary of Education. For many years, he was the Chicago Public School CEO, and he also, during that time, served on the board of the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. And he had many speeches and quotes and comments that he gave to the media that I just thought were really on the mark. So I just pulled out one as an example. On April 1st of 2008, he was quoted in USA Today as saying, "We just value our right to bear arms more than we value our children, and our priorities are fundamentally backwards." I think that could not have been better said. And also, Mayor Daley was very well known. For 22 years, he was our mayor, and very, very active trying to protect Chicago's gun laws and actually get better national gun laws. One of his quotes on the same day in the Tribune, which I thought was apropos for this audience, was, "This is a public health epidemic. We're struggling to find the cure for AIDS. We're struggling to find the cure for cancer. We know the cure for this public health epidemic. Get rid of the guns." And then he also said, "We are a country of laws. We are a country of laws, not a nation of guns." So the problem of gun violence is obviously not confined to Chicago. It is a nationwide problem. So it's actually the leading cause of death for African Americans aged 10 to 24 in Chicago. And this may also be true nationally, but I wasn't able to confirm that, so I just want to say I know it's true for Chicago. Homicide accounts for more deaths in that African Americans aged 10 to 24 than the next nine leading causes combined. So the gun violence that we experience in Chicago and that other cities experience has other costs to it. It deprives resources from other priorities the city might have and diverts them into dealing with the problem of gun violence. There's also some data showing that for every homicide, either 70 people move out of the city or decide not to move in, so it has an impact on how many people live in the city's tax base. In Chicago, over the last 10 years, the census found that we lost 200,000 residents. That's in stark contrast to New York City, which grew by 600,000 over the same time period and has a homicide rate. Again, that's about a third of ours. So some of my colleagues at the University of Chicago Crime Lab did some calculations that the mayor had requested when they were trying to address some of the gun laws that the Supreme Court overturned. And they estimated that gun violence cost the city of Chicago about $2.5 billion annually. That's the indirect and direct costs, and that's about $2,500 per Chicago household. So we often say that victims, we think of the people who were shot as being the victims. Well, in a sense, everyone is a victim when it has this kind of impact. One other, I think, important point, and this is true for Chicago, and I think it's probably true for a lot of other cities, is how disproportionately concentrated the gun violence is and the violence is. So University of Chicago is based in Hyde Park. Right across the street from Hyde Park is a community called Washington Park. If you cross Cottage Grove from Hyde Park into Washington Park, you're basically going from a community that's as safe as the safest cities in Western Europe to a part of the city that's as dangerous as the most dangerous cities in the Western Hemisphere or countries in the Western Hemisphere. This is just to illustrate the point that really this is disproportionately affecting young people, both as victims and as perpetrators. Those are the sort of age crime for both victims and perpetrators. So it really is concentrated among young people. So I think it's really important when we talk about the facts and the data and the statistics to not lose sight that these are real people, real families, real people who are affected by this. So this was, I don't even know if I can read it without crying, but this is one of the, a couple years ago, the day before the first day of school, this young girl was shot and killed, and I'll let you read the quote yourself, but it's pretty powerful. And we've actually done a little bit of analysis looking at the homicides of young people in Chicago 21 and under. And we did it, I think, for 2006 and found that 20% of the young people who were shot and killed would be what are considered innocent bystanders. Now, I know we're all public health people, and it doesn't matter, what the intention was, and we want to save all lives. But I think it's particularly compelling when you have, a 10-year-old girl like this who's killed. And again, to sort of illustrate the point that it really, even if you're not a direct victim, even if you're not shot, the impact that this has on your everyday life This was a reporter, a friend of mine, who was doing a story trying to look at the broad impact of gun violence in Chicago, and she interviewed this little boy who had witnessed the shooting. And you could just sort of see the angst on his face and his quote, you know, "I don't think the world is safe for me." So this really does have such a profound effect, even if you're not directly targeted. I put this in here because I just felt like The Economist, after the Virginia Tech tragedy, had such a powerful article, and this was the cover of The Economist. And I feel like, sadly, after that horrendous massacre, we have made no progress, and if anything, we've had some setbacks nationally. So somehow I got picked to talk about, I'm not a lawyer, to talk about the Second Amendment and some of the legal rulings. So I'm going to try to cover this quickly, and then others on the panel will hopefully correct me. So suffice it to say that the Second Amendment from 1791 through 2008 was really considered granting a collective right or a right tied to militia service. That all changed in 2008 when the Supreme Court in the District of Columbia v. Heller struck down the Washington, D.C. handgun ban in a very contentious 5-4 decision, and provided that handguns could be, you know, the Second Amendment did provide a right to handguns in the District of Columbia. What was still up in the air was whether or not that opinion only applied to D.C. or if it applied to the rest of the country. Well, Chicago helped resolve that question in McDonald v. Chicago in 2010. Similarly, in a contentious 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court essentially said that this does apply across the country, that individuals do have a right to a handgun. What is still up in the air is exactly how far that Second Amendment right will go, and that's actually being actively litigated across the country. Chicago's new gun ordinances are being litigated. And I think, you know, one of the implications of this is, you know, lots of cities that have the gun laws ranging from assault weapons bans to you know, under what circumstance people can have guns and those kinds of things. You know, cash-strapped cities are now having to spend limited resources trying to fight against all this litigation, which I think is a really unfortunate consequence. And I think it sort of remains to be seen exactly where the Supreme Court will ultimately say that that line is. So I'm hoping Daniel can say maybe a tiny bit more about that. This is a little bit of the sort of pitch of the Crime Lab, which is the part of the reason why we would say that there hasn't been enough progress in the area of crime and violence, and gun violence in particular, is we're not taking data and evidence as seriously as we should. And this is in stark contrast to other areas in medicine where we've made really dramatic progress. So the trend lines that are going down are for infant mortality, for heart disease, strokes, and then for homicide, it's the sort of blue line in the middle that goes up and then goes back down. But essentially, we are in the same place or maybe a little worse off now than we were in 1950. So I stole this from one of my former grantees. The folks at Penn did an analysis looking at how much federal funding was going into various causes of death and violence. I think this was up through 2002, so it's a little bit outdated, but I don't think there's a huge amount more going into violence. And it's just, so that's how much federal money is going in compared to the years of life lost. You know, here's another way of, I think, looking at the same issue, which is how many cases there are of these various diseases and how many NIH awards there are. So I think there's room for a little bit of improvement. again, I should really provide attributes. So that's from Rose Cheney and the folks at Penn. If anybody wants to know, I should have put it on there. So just to summarize, I think Chicago really is an island of, I think, sane and reasonable both gun laws and very aggressive efforts to go after guns. So the police department, 10,000 guns a year, you don't do that by accident. I mean, there really is a very strategic focus effort to address guns and gun violence. And yet we're being undermined by the fact that the rest of the country and federally doesn't have the same view that Chicago does, that we should be protecting our kids. The other point is we tend to think of this as a U.S. problem, and it really, we have to recognize our role in affecting violence in other countries. I think Mexico is probably the most acute example of that. It really is horrendous what's happening in Mexico. 87% of the guns, it's estimated, that are going into Mexico and being used by the cartels are coming from the U.S. And, you know, I find it interesting that we said to Mexico, stop the drugs from coming in, it's a supply problem. Do everything you can, so Calderon, for better or for worse, basically declared war on the cartels to try to stop the supply. And when the guns are going down there, we tell them it's a demand problem. How is that possible? So anyway, it's just an enormous problem, and I think Josh is going to talk a lot more about the weapons, the U.S. civilian market, but this is from an ATF friend of mine. These are the weapons of choice, and they are coming out of the U.S. civilian market, and these are not your grandfather's hunting rifles, shall we say. These are very, very lethal, very dangerous weapons, weapons that can penetrate standard body armor, which is why they can kill police officers and governors and others that are in armored vehicles, and they're getting them quite easily out of the U.S. civilian market. So here's another picture of some of the seizures, the drugs, the guns. And this, a friend of mine, a former student of I think David's, Arturo Cervantes, is working for the Ministry of Health, and he had done a presentation on the sort of cost of cartel violence in Mexico, and I pulled this slide out of his presentation. So the green line is the homicide rates in Latin America, and it's really, I think, driven largely by Mexico, but also to some extent what's happening in Central America as well. And you could see 2006 is when we really sort of, when Mexico really started to go after the cartels, and, you know, the demand for guns started picking up because of that, and you see the homicide rate. It's a hockey stick, I guess, as Arturo described it. So we really bear some responsibility here. And this is one of my favorite quotes that I also stole from a friend of mine who's an ATF agent. It was in one of his presentations. So John Foster Dulles said, of all tasks of government, the most basic is to protect its citizens against violence. So, thank you.